seership, psychic and spiritual. What is seership? Seership is popularly understood in the Western tongue as clairaudience, clairvoyance. Clairvoyance comes from the French root. Clair means clear, voyance means vision, clear vision. Clairaudience, clear hearing. Now, seership or clairvoyance generally mean, for us to, as laymen, we can understand it as the ability to see events and things and persons at a distance. Ability to see through obstacles which objects which obstruct the ordinary physical sight, and also ability to hear sound, speech, etc. at a distance which our normal ear cannot hear because of the distance. It also means seeing events, things and persons which happened or which existed in the past, and also to see things that is to transpire in the future, prophetic vision. To know what happens in the future time. Now, not only to see, sitting where one is, what's happening anywhere in any part of the world without moving, and also to see and know of events and things which transpired in the past and which is to come in the future. So this is called clairvoyance or seership. Now how do you account for it? How does it happen? Of course, modern science, modern psychology account for it. Why? Because, as somewhere beautifully said, either in Isis Enfield or some other theosophical writing, that there is a wide gulf between the ancient psychology and modern psychology. Whereas in ancient psychology, psychology was a basis for physiology. But in modern science, psychology is a basis for physiology. Or rather, physiology is the basis for psychology. What does it mean? In ancient science, psychology is basis for physiology in the sense the physiological processes has psychological basis. Psychological and spiritual basis. But modern science doesn't believe in it. Its approach is the reverse. It holds that what they call mind or soul is a product of physical matter. So it is the very reverse of the ancient science. As long as modern science holds to this view that psyche is the offshoot of the phenomena of physical matter, we can never ever come to explain this wonderful powers that we have in us. Seership is one such. Of course, modern science tries to explain it, conducted many experiments, and they call this study of extraordinary phenomena, they call it extraordinary phenomena, like clairvoyance, and thought transference, and so on and so forth. They call it extraordinary phenomena. Study of that is called parapsychology. But parapsychology has not made much advance at all. It is all ultimately comes down to mere speculation based on the premises that psychology is the physiology is the foundation of psychology. Let it be. Now, be that as it may. Now, coming to the real basis or explanation for this extraordinary for us, because it's so rare, people exhibiting this faculties of clairvoyance and clairaudience, this can be understood only in terms of ancient psychology. Now let's recall the propositions of psychology. Now, every study class, in every study class we have at the ULT, we recall the basic propositions of theosophy, three basic fundamental propositions, and apart from the three basic fundamental propositions, we also consider 10 propositions of psychology. These are very, very important. If you want to really, our friend was asking, what should we do to acquire wisdom? This is the thing we have to do. We have to make ourselves thoroughly acquainted, intellectual acquaintance, with the basic fundamental propositions, axioms of ancient science, wisdom, religion. Because in ancient science, religions, science become one. There's no difference between them. Now, coming to the ancient psychology, it says what we see out in the world there and what we see of man is not what we see. It is something very much more. The nature or universe, the world that we see, is only an appearance. What meets our physical senses is objective to our physical senses. But that is all. There is within or beyond or another dimension of space, there is an invisible universe, invisible nature, which is the ensouling, energizing inner nature, the soul of the outer and model of the outer. And it is a vital principle, life-giving principle of the visible nature. So there is the outer nature or universe, world, and there is the inner world, inner nature, which is beyond the scope of the physical senses to apprehend. And over and above the visible outer and the invisible inner nature, there is a spirit, supreme spirit. And the spirit is the source of all forces, and it alone is eternal and it's indestructible. The first two, the visible nature and the invisible nature, constantly change, but the spirit changes not. So we have three aspects of the visible world. Similarly, man also has three aspects. Man is not just his physical body. This is where science suffers from its limitation. When he says man, man means physiological machine. It's not so. Just like nature has three aspects, man also has three aspects. He has his objective physical body, and this physical body is alive and active, things, shows all the phenomena of thought, feeling, volition, discrimination. It is not the body that shows all these activities, conscious activities. This is because of the vital, invisible, inner soul which acts through the outer body. It is a vital principle. Who is the real man within the outer physical man? And this invisible inner man is the real man. The outer visible man is only outer shell. And beyond the visible outer body and the invisible inner, there is a spirit just corresponding to the threefold nature. And the spirit alone is sovereign, immortal. Now, very important statement is made that when the real man, the inner man, succeeds in freeing himself from the limitations of the physical and comes to understand his indissoluble union and connection with the Supreme from which he has emanated and merges himself with the spirit, he becomes an immortal being. And he becomes an immortal entity. And this whole process of becoming immortal is a stupendous science. In ancient times it used to be called as magic. So a knowledge of these principles and of the way by which the omniscience and omnipotence of the spirit can be acquired by man while still living in physical body, this is called magic or spiritual wisdom, Gupta Vidya. And when man achieves this, then he obtains the omniscience, that means all-knowingness and omnipotence of the spirit while still living in the body, and has absolute control over the lower forces of nature and his own body. So, if we understand this psychological principle, then we know that we have extraordinary psychological and spiritual and divine powers and faculties in us. And then, what about seership? The proposition number 7 says that all things that ever were, that are, and that will be, have their record upon the astral light. It is a tablet of the unseen universe. What is the astral light? It is the magnetic light, that invisible magnetic light that surrounds and penetrates the earth on another plane of consciousness, state of being, and beyond which is the still higher and diviner astral, and then comes the spiritual. So, in this astral is the image, pictures of all that has happened in the world, all that is happening, and by a seer who is able to, you know, see in the astral light, know all that has happened, all that is happening anywhere in the world, and he can know all that can be known. But for accurate, infallible seership, he has to be the initiated adept. There are seers or clairvoyants who are natural born. They do see more or less accurately. But in case of a seer who has gone through the process of initiation into the sacred mysteries, his vision cannot err, and his sight will be, his seeing will be very accurate. Now, this gives us some idea that firstly, that the world and man, universe is not what it appears, it is much more than what it appears, that there are higher planes and higher states of consciousness in us, and man and the universe are, you know, they are related, intimately related, inseparably related, and we have the power, we have the since we have, we are in our inmost being, in our true self, we are portion of the Supreme, and are working through various vehicles and vestures down to the physical body. We have senses and faculties which connects us to all the planes of being, and we, since we are essentially one with the Spirit, one with our Atman, we can acquire the divine knowledge and power of knowing everything. Omniscience, we have the power. Now, after having said this, let's consider some phenomena of clairvoyance. There is one which is very common. Many have perhaps come across people who are able to read envelopes, sealed envelopes. You write something in a paper, seal it in the envelope and keep it in your pocket. Now, the person who has this clairvoyant ability will say, if you ask him, he will tell without opening the letter, what is in it? What is it written? So this is a very elementary, ordinary exhibition of clairvoyant power. And there is extension of it. His ability of people to see all the events and happenings around any particular object given to them in the past and in the present. For instance, give them any object handled or owned by a person, he may not know that person. You may not reveal the identity of the person. Suppose a keychain or a pen or whatever the person is using, give to the clairvoyant. He will hold it in his hand, apply it to his forehead, or apply it to the pit of the stomach, and then know all about the person, his character, all about him. It's clearly visible to him. He will narrate without any mistake. This is termed as psychometry. Metry means measure, psychometry. This term was coined by one Professor Denton, whose wife in the last century, in the 19th century, whose wife was a clairvoyant. And he did many experiments with her and wrote a book, The Soul of Things. It is there in our library. It is there in the library of the UNESCO World Culture also. You can, probably it is available on the Google. Maybe. You can read it. So he did many experiments. Now, she was given some object excavated from archaeological sites pertaining to some old civilization, or even pertaining to some prehistoric times, and she held the object and narrated all the events that took place at that, in the vicinity of the object, the persons, the events, and all that. And he has recorded that she was also able to see the prehistoric animals moving about and their appearance and character and all that, which happened in the vicinity of that object, and they identify it as very ancient. It pertained to a very far off geological time, maybe tertiary period or something. So, ability to know and see and hear things which happens at a distance or which happened in the long time past, either without any aid, without any object given to the person, or directly. This is called seership in one sense. And we have historically one 17th century mystic of Sweden called Swedenborg. Swedenborg was a seer, and he has recorded 17th century, he has recorded his experiences, his knowledge he acquired by his seership, and he had a following also. It is said that when he was in Stockholm in Sweden, somewhere in late 17th century, London, there was a conflagration in London, the whole city was burning. You know, in those days there was no communication like telephone or wireless, radio. But sitting in Stockholm, he said, no, London is burning. And later on his followers confirmed that it was indeed burning. So this is clairvoyance. Now, historically speaking again, in ancient Greece, in the temple of Delphi, dedicated to God Apollo, there was always housed one clairvoyant person. They called her the Pythoness. You see the glossary on Pythoness. One of the sensitives who had this psychic faculties developed in her, belonged to poorer classes. She was taken to the temple and she was consecrated to the temple. Once consecrated to the temple, she is dead to the outer world. She is entirely dedicated to the temple. And under the care and guidance of an initiated adept, a hierophant. So she had the ability of prophesying. She sat on a tripod made of brass on the ground with fissures in the ground from which emanations came up from the earth, and she was used to be suffused with those emanations, stimulating her kind of powers. And kings and commoners would come to the temple and ask for guidance, and she would prophesy the events and guide them in solving their problems, what to do, what not to do, and so on. And you can quote some examples. It is very interesting. Herodotus, the great historian, speaks of it, mentions it. Now, the king of Lydia, in those days, the emperors also used to repair to Greece in order to consult the oracle at Delphi. The king of Lydia somewhere around 500 BC or so, called Contalus. He was succeeded by another person who did not belong to the royal family, but he succeeded to the throne by killing Contalus. Why the emperor was killed by this person, who was a commoner but one of the officials of the emperor, but his close confidant, and Contalus trusted him, but he did some foolish mistake which, though the friend of his was reluctant to kill, but somehow the events so transpired, which Herodotus explains we are not going to, he had to kill the emperor. And then who is to succeed the throne? The whole population was enraged. How could this man kill our emperor and ascend the throne? It is not acceptable. So what is to be done? They go to Delphi and consult the oracle. The oracle says that now this has happened. Though he is not of a royal blood, still he has the ability. Under the circumstances, he only has to assume the responsibility of ruling the kingdom. He has to succeed to the throne. But because of the deed, because of his deed, the fifth generation from him, with the fifth generation after him, his line of descent will go. The kingdom will be lost only till the fifth generation. And Herodotus goes on to narrate the story how in the fifth generation he was succeeded by Gyges, Condylus. The name of the king who succeeded him is Gyges. And fifth generation from Gyges was Croesus, and what mistakes Croesus did. You know, he again consults Oracle of Delphi and then attacks Persia and gets defeated. And there the whole wonderful Lydian empire comes to an end, as prophesied by four generations before at Delphi. So this is one example of clairvoyance or seership. Now we must understand that there are two kinds of seership. One is merely psychic seership, another is spiritual and divine seership. There is a vast difference between the two. Just because we develop a faculty to see the astral life and develop clairvoyant powers, it does not mean that what we see is accurate. What we see is accurate. What we see is true. It may look wonderful to us. Some of the things that we see may be true or may not be true. It is involved in some sort of an error. That's first point. Second point is, what we see in the astral light, though it may look very wonderful to other people, ordinary people, still what a clairvoyant sees is not the whole truth, it's only partial truth. It is just a little further extension of our physical senses, that's all. What we see with our physical senses of any thing or person is not the whole of the thing or the person. And clairvoyance is seeing still a little further than the physical. But even then, it is not the whole of seeing. Therefore, there is always error involved in it. So we have quite a few clairvoyant people around, both in India and in the West, who offer their services to help people to advise them on many of their problems, like some person has lost his son or child or relative, and consult a clairvoyant, and he will guide, look, he's such and such a place, go and find. We know of one person in North Canada district who has helped old parents, not old parents, young parents only, whose son had run away to Bombay. They didn't know where he was. They consulted him and they accurately said he is in such and such place. They did find him. See, it may come true, may not come true. So this is psychic clairvoyance. And also, as already said, they can know the past and also predict to some extent the future. Now, there was many psychics were predicting in 2012 there's going to be end of the world and so on. This is an example of a wrong clairvoyance. This is an example how clairvoyance can be wrong. Now, why error enters into clairvoyance or astral seeing or psychic seeing is this, that we are using only our lower psychic sight, not our spiritual sight, and we are able to see into one or the other aspect of the astral light. Now, the proposition of psychology we read, that there is the physical and there is the psychic and there is the spiritual and the divine. Now, ability to see into the psychic world or the astral world is not all seeing, because the psychic world itself has many planes. As one goes deeper and deeper, one approaches the spiritual, it becomes more and more inclusive, clearer and more accurate. As one descends into the lower planes, it becomes more and more clouded with the earth emanations. Now the astral plane is full of magnetic emanations from the earth, and images here in the earth gets reflected in the reverse way, and in the spiritual world of archetypes, they get reflected in the psychic world, astral world, again in the reverse way. And added to that, the psychic emanations of the thoughts and deeds of people creates much confusion in the astral world. Therefore, it is inaccurate. One reason. Second reason. As long as we have not brought our mind and our senses under perfect control and prevent our desires and thoughts and ideas from projecting images into the astral light, prevent this happening, this seeing will invariably be inaccurate. Now, when a seer sees in the astral light, you're consulting a clairvoyant, and he sees into the astral and tell you, his reading. His own unconscious thought process or desire, and the dose of the person who is consulting, they also project very clear image in the astral light, and the seer cannot distinguish between these. The mere ideas of the people and the reality, what is the real, the thing to be seen. This is the reason why it cannot be, the psychic seeing or astral seeing is always not accurate. And another important point to be borne in mind is this, it is, you know, many people strive, want, aspire to develop clairvoyance. They want to develop the capacity to see into the astral light. Cosby warns, never make an attempt to do that. It is very dangerous. Why dangerous? Because you will be dealing with the elemental forces in the astral world which have very close connection with our lower passional nature. And by exercising the clairvoyant powers, especially for a monetary consideration and so on, it has a very injurious effect on our nervous system and also accentuates our passional nature. Whereas we have to completely get rid of, kill out karma and all selfishness and spiritualize our nature by such clairvoyant, exercise of clairvoyant powers, our lower nature becomes more accentuated, the very reverse of our evolutionary development, spiritual development. So it is not advisable to acquire these powers, clairvoyant seeing. So what one aspire to is spiritual seership. Aspire to acquire spiritual seership. How do we acquire spiritual seership? We acquire spiritual seership or spiritual wisdom by completely subjugating our lower nature, eliminating all selfishness and uniting our mind purified by discriminative knowledge and dispassion, purified by discriminative knowledge and dispassion, united with the higher divine self. Once our purified mind and heart and body becomes united, the mind freed from all this and become united with the higher self, the Ishvara within, then renunciation of the lower and making it absolute and complete instrument of the higher, and therefore unfold spiritual will, then only one becomes a perfect seer. As we read in the Voice of the Silence, once we acquire the spiritual will comes only when our personal desires and passions are completely eliminated and transmuted would not be the correct word, it must be completely eliminated, and one becomes fully imbued with love immortal. Altruism, abandonment of all self-interest, and live only to benefit the world, when this is fully consummated, only then spiritual will becomes active in us. In the ordinary life, The will is captive of kama, desire. So behind will stands desire. So it is our desire which moves the will. And invariably, will is a purely it is a pure constructive power and a force. It is a desire which gives it direction. That's why as we desire, so will it happen to us. So when we have completely killed our personal desire, will becomes free from passions and desires, purified from karma, and becomes a spiritual power with which the soul can then subjugate the whole personality, suspend the activity of the senses from their involuntary propensities, and control every thought and feeling, at will concentrate the mind upon any one point of concentration to the exclusion of all else, ekagrata, direct the purified mind itself to the supreme. So this self-mastery has to be obtained. Then he becomes a perfect seer. This is what we read in the voice of the silence. See? Then his body becomes the tree of knowledge. His body becomes the tree of knowledge. We have the seed of the tree of knowledge in us, because Patanjali says that in man there is omniscience in the form of a, what is the omniscience which is infinite in Ishvara is as a germ in man. So we have that potentiality. When that is developed by the spiritual discipline that we have been speaking of, then man realizes his oneness with the whole universe and the supreme. So he has obtained, he has reared the tree of knowledge of good and evil, and he becomes a perfect seer. And look at these verses, which reading this will give us an idea of what self-mastery he will have. Now, when the purified mind and self is united with the higher self, now individual self is lost in the universal self, and that is your true self, from which you first radiated, so your divine descended to the body. Now when this happens, your individuality is lost. The drop becomes the ocean, and the ocean merges with the drop. The spark lost in the fire. The ray of the sun merges with the radiance of the sun. Now you are the doer and also the witness. You are the radiator and also the radiation. So, color, sound, light, you are the master of that whole correlation. So, remove the delusion from your mind and heart, and you become a master of samadhi, the state of faultless vision. It says, now rest beneath the Bodhi tree. Rest beneath the Bodhi tree, the tree of wisdom of good and evil, the tree of wisdom. Buddha attained his enlightenment on the Bodhi tree. Bodhi tree is a wonderful symbol, which is the perfection of all knowledge. had a master of samadhi. So then such a person will be a perfect seer. He has obtained the faculty of faultless seeing. For to his gaze no past, present and the future offer any obstacles. He is the eternal present and he can see manvantaras and yugas both in the past and in the future. He becomes a yogi of the times circle, kalajnani. We'll stop here and then we can pick up questions.
Thank you.